Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and today's conversation is with Ellen Embry, Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs within the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us from IBM is Terry Ergens. Ellen, the military health system is a global system designed to both build and sustain a fit and healthy fighting force and to medically support those forces anytime, anywhere, as you have mentioned. Over the last couple of years, you have taken some bold steps to redefine how the military health system works. Could you tell us more about how the organization has focused on the health of the force before, during, and after its deployments?
Oh, sure. We learned lessons, as we went. We learned early on that we needed to do much better documentation of the health experiences in theater. And we needed to do a better job to document the status of health prior to deployment, as well as to ensure that we identified any concerns of individuals returning from deployment as quickly as possible upon return from deployment. So we expanded and improved the way in which we screen for and assess the health status of individuals prior to deployment. We also created capability in theater to better identify health encounters, to document them so they were readily available to our providers back in the States as well as the providers in theater so they could have more comprehensive information about the background of the individual and how to better treat them, as well as to do not one but two follow-up assessments upon return, one immediately afterwards to document how they felt and the concerns they might have about their experiences, as well as a follow-up 6 to 9 months following deployment. And that follow-up actually was to ensure that we could detect, particularly we were concerned about mental health concerns. We found through research that mental health concerns start to actually reveal themselves in significant ways in that 3 to 6 month time frame. So we thought perhaps if we had an opportunity to nip that in the bud, help them understand that we care about them, it's been a while since they've been returned, how are they doing? Do you have any concerns that we could help you with? And so we instituted these assessments before and after to make sure that we were doing everything we could to provide for the ongoing health of those individuals. And with repeated deployments, that's become even more important.
Now, I understand that the reserve forces comprise more than half of the U.S. military and that recently you worked to provide medical and dental readiness services and these post-deployment health assessment services to members of the reserve forces. Could you elaborate a bit on these efforts in this program?
Oh, yes. It's called the Reserve Component Health Readiness Program. And it's available to all of the reserve components. And the reserve components actually pay for this program. It's not part of the Defense Health Program. It does several things before deployment. First of all, it assures that reserve component members have access to appointments to check on the status of their health, to document the status of their health, to ensure that when they are seen, that they have a very high quality assessment of their ability to perform in to meet their fit for duty requirements, if you will, and also to make the records that we have on the status of their health retrievable. In the past, it's all been in paper, so this is an important part of capability to ensure that they are ready to deploy. After deployment, this program provides a health review of the individuals to make sure that their concerns have been identified, that we refer them and reduce barriers for care. If they are in the first 6 months of their deployment, it assures rapid access to our health care system for the first 6 months following deployment. After that, they have choices. They can either sign up for TRICARE Reserve Select, which is a special program for them and their families to get health care in the DOD. And if they opt not to select that, then the VA provides them, the individual but not their families, access to care in their system for up to 5 years. So this program assures that any kind of care that's required that they are given access to the appropriate place for the care that they need. And it also provides, again, the documentation of any health encounter that occurs in the system.
You also worked with the Military Services and the Defense Logistics Agency to restructure wartime medical logistics programs in order to improve efficiencies and effectiveness across the continuum of care. How does your logistics consolidation improve operations and delivery, and how have medical logistics improved?
I think that the importance of medical logistics really can't be overstated. Logistics has everything to do with our mission, and we could not do it without logistics. And so how are we improving it? What have we done? We've used essentially technology and smart management to eliminate waste. We've evaluated opportunities to reduce redundancy, to streamline the way in which we identify requirements. We've consolidated the capability to identify and buy, particularly for operating theaters, supplies and material that function interchangeably to improve not only our ability to support operations, but to improve our ability to care for patients as they move from the point of injury all the way back to the United States. We have different kinds of health delivery platforms from on the ground right after the injury with Ford surgical teams, very small little teams, to little clinics and little hospital MASH type units all the way to level 5 hospitals. And so the ability to have the supplies and the important components of managing a very, very complex injured individual from that point all the way back requires the ability to plug and play these important components. So we've worked very hard to come up with that supply chain capability, and we're working with our supply vendors across the country. We've identified ways to do bulk, saving millions of dollars. I mean, we project a cost avoidance in some areas in excess of $25 million. So we have identified joint national contracts for pharmaceuticals, which has avoided about $115 million in costs. We have new prime vendor agreements with all of our military treatment facilities and surgical suppliers. The list goes on and on, but it's been quite a ride in this area, and I think we really have a strong partnership with the Defense Logistics Agency. We've developed a fairly comprehensive and rigorous strategic plan to continuously improve our ability to deliver the best capability at the lowest cost to the taxpayer.
Great. Now, switching gears a bit, the first two cases of the H1N1 influenza virus were first detected by the DOD in late April of 2009. Now, in the United States, I understand that the Department of Homeland Security has the lead, with the CDC leading the medical response for our country. So what has been DOD's role in this process?
Well, DOD, because of its global footprint, we are the U.S. government's biggest capability to identify through disease surveillance, health surveillance, education, and support to countries where we have a physical presence in partnership with the Department of State. We are able to identify emerging infectious disease and share that. Because we're part of the U.S. government, we share that with HHS, who has the lead in the U.S. for reporting to the World Health Organization. The Department of Homeland Security's role in that is to make sure that the nation as a whole is prepared to respond to that kind of an emergency in non-clinical ways, but in, you know, the business of doing business, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so the DOD's role is to both help HHS and CDC, and their, at least from my perspective, from a health affairs perspective, is to be a partner with them as U.S. government entities to enhance information about what we're dealing with, to improve the case definition, to mobilize our public health experts to ensure that we're working together in a consistent way in responding to the public health emergency. On the other hand, the rest of the department that is not clinical in its capability, the Department of Defense, works with the rest of the Department of Homeland Security to ensure that we sustain important and critical capabilities within the government and within the nation to assure economic survivability, you know, and making sure that critical services are delivered regardless of whether there's a pandemic or not.
Now, I understand that you've recently visited the USS Comfort in Panama before it departed on its latest humanitarian tour. Can you tell us a little bit about your office's role in global humanitarian and disaster relief efforts? And to what extent do these types of engagements represent an extension of U.S. soft power in the form of medical diplomacy and building bridges to peace?
Well, the Department of Defense health stability operations and our work in global humanitarian assistance and disaster relief operations is really about promoting health and stability. We have some recent experiences in the past that has demonstrated the value of that, not only because of health is a great ambassador, but bringing health to a country that has not necessarily the best public health infrastructure certainly helps make friends with folks who don't necessarily have a view of the U.S. as a positive country. And being the U.S. military, there's a lot of folks that view the military as not helpful, but perhaps with guns and engaged in ongoing operations, there may be other perceptions that we would like to counter with what we can do in the way of helping other nations. So we've been a partner with many other nations in a variety of ways in the humanitarian assistance area. The tsunami in Indonesia was one example. There have been earthquake responses in Pakistan and Peru, and more recently in Costa Rica. Our support to the populations in terms of public health risks associated with floods in Honduras. We've had a number of places where we've demonstrated that we can win hearts and minds with the U.S. military, not just through other means. So I think the hospital ships and the operations that the Navy has been engaged in to help expand that role in South America and in the Pacific region has been extraordinarily successful over the last several years. Frankly, the recent establishment of the Africa Command, it's not because there's any military threat there, necessarily. The actual Africa Command has a very significant part of its mission looking at humanitarian assistance and looking at how to promote health and stability through military-to-military security assistance. We feel very strongly that this is an important mission of the Department of Defense.
That's great. That's fantastic. What about efforts to enhance the continuum of care provided to service members? We will ask Ellen Embry, Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, to share with us when our discussion about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.